Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Today, we are live at First Horizon Park, where the Nashville Sounds take on Scranton today, 6:35 first pitch. Tons of great seats still available. Again, I'm very excited about today's game. So there's one thing this week that I've made a lot of fun of when it comes to the Titans, and it is Brian Callahan's new offseason approach, saying Tuesday that he thought long and hard about all the mistakes that the Titans made last year. He wanted to kind of reformat the team this offseason, and his grand idea was to take the team, to shake them in a bag, and to make them into eight separate yet equal teams that have a captain and a co-captain. And again, it's not offense, defense, special teams, but it's team one, team two, team three, team four. And that in everything they do, there's a competition aspect to it. So you jump off sides, you lose a point. You throw an interception. He said the other day, if Amani Hooker intercepts a pass, then that is 3 points for Amani Hooker's team, but minus 3 points for the quarterback who threw it. So if the quarterback that threw it is on Amani Hooker's team, then it's a net of zero. And on Tuesday, when Brian Callahan said all of that, and let me say this, I like Brian Callahan. I think he's a nice guy. I don't have anything against him. But when I heard Brian Callahan say that, I thought to myself, what? This is the National Football League, the NFL. Where, again, a guy that worked in it for 36 years that knew what he was doing told me players only care about two things, money and playing time. Tony Pollard was asked, so what are these points for? What does the winner get if they do this? And he said, you know, that's a good idea. I don't know. And I also, again, have a really hard time believing that because you lost your team 2 points in that off-season field day competition, that in week three against the Colts, it's going to have an added effect. And yet, I have been surprised by people that have argued in favor of this transition for the Titans this off-season. I kind of expect this from the usual suspects, you know, the people on Twitter that are just freaking pom-pom waving fanboys. One person said on Twitter, and I had to send it because I was like, oh my God. As the Titans put out a tweet of guys racing, and it says, the competition is heating up. Somebody said, I love what Callie is doing so far. He is focusing on the culture and the brotherhood of the Titans more so than the schemes and the play. It doesn't matter how much talent you have. If the culture is terrible, build the brotherhood first. Building the brotherhood. Is this really how you do that? Playing tug of war? Is that really? I mean, in all seriousness, is that how you do it? And somebody said to me, and I would say somebody who, you know, more in the know than I am, said, I don't understand the hate on the offseason program. It isn't fun and games. They're building discipline on the field and leadership in the locker room. I'm going to be honest with you about leadership. I think that leadership is kind of like a talent. I don't think that you can make somebody a leader. Like, I don't think Vince Lombardi could make Jeffrey Simmons a leader. Jeffrey Simmons is a follower. And so with all of this that you're doing and saying, okay, you know, it'll be this way and, you know, we're going to develop our leaders. Maybe. But I think leadership comes from people who really have it. And then maybe a coach, you know, takes a guy aside and says, hey, this is what I need out of you to be a better leader. I think there are some guys that, again, no matter how good of a player they are, I don't think you can train A.J. Brown, for instance, to be a good leader. I don't think you could, no matter who the coach was, train Vince Young to be a good leader. Whereas I think Derrick Henry, whether he plays for Nick Saban, Mike Mularkey, Mike Vrabel, John Harbaugh, Jared Stillman, Derrick Henry's going to be a good leader no matter what. But I was kind of surprised because I had a college coach reach out to me today. And the college coach said, when we were talking about this, said, I've never been in a program that didn't do something like that. But I don't know all about the NFL, but it was at times a decent way to measure success and progress and accountability in the offseason while developing leaders and teamwork, all while creating a competitive environment. Other businesses use this version of a point system or whatever to evaluate employees for employee of the month or whatever the case may be. It'd be interesting to hear the players' take. I bet the offseason is the same. They are just placing a value on certain actions, both positively and negatively. So there are actually some people out there that think that this stuff is going to work. That think that what Brian Callahan, again, he sat long and hard this offseason and thought about, how am I going to build this team? And I joked that it feels like he popped in the DVD to Remember the Titans and said, oh, Coach Boone, that's what I'm going to do. And again, I'm making fun of that when I do it. I mean that almost sarcastically. But I am a little surprised by people that are saying, no, like this, there may be something to this. Again, talking about, hey, that's how certain businesses evaluate employee of the month. And maybe I'm just wired a little differently. I'm going to tell you, there are probably some dudes in that locker room that are wired like me, and there are probably some dudes, most of them probably aren't. But when it comes to the extra stuff, again, being employee of the month, I don't care about that. That doesn't move me one way or another. You know, in order to win a bunch of awards in the media, you have to apply for the awards. And I've seen a bunch of people that win a lot of awards. Emmy winning, blah, blah, blah. I never get caught up in that because, again, I really only worry about doing the actual job itself. But maybe, again, with the guys that aren't wired like me, maybe they'll learn not to jump offside or learn not to turn the football over because we're doing something fun. I figured you wouldn't jump offside because it's your job to not jump offside, or that you wouldn't turn the ball over because if you turn the ball over too much, you're not going to play. But again, college coach, somebody in the know saying, no, this is building leadership and teamwork. And again, I'll be stunned if this actually makes a difference. Again, I've watched 1,000 Football Life documentaries. I remember watching the one where they talked about Troy Aikman being benched for Steve Berline. I remember the one where Terry Bradshaw went to Chuck Knoll and asked to be traded because he wasn't playing, and Chuck Knoll said, I'm not going to trade you. And then Terry Bradshaw harbored ill will and angst towards Chuck Knoll to the point that Terry Bradshaw didn't even go to Chuck Knoll's funeral. Like, I've seen that. I've never seen any Football Life documentaries where Terrell Davis or Emmitt Smith or one of these great players sits down and says, yeah, when Coach came up with some what felt like corporate gobbledygook bullcrap in order to try to get us to not turn the football over, that is when I learned to take care of the ball. But what do I know? Because, again, people think this might work. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Corey Curtis, News 2, will join us early here on the program. Somebody texted and said, have you not seen the clip of them playing rock, paper, scissors? Time out. There's a clip of them playing rock, paper, scissors. David Reed, are you aware of this?
I'm hoping that's a joke to trigger you.
Well, because somebody said to me today when defending this program, you know, again, we're building the brotherhood here. Like, it's, again, Remember the Titans when Coach Boone. You know what? why doesn't Brian Callahan have them wake up at 5 in the morning and go on a jog? I mean, I live out in Forest Hills, and they have all those signs of, like, the Civil War, you know, monuments or whatever, and have them go jog from the facility at Metro Center all the way out to Forest Hills or Franklin or wherever these battles were fought, and have that moment like Coach Boone in Remember the Titans at Gettysburg. Why not do that? But the person that, again, I was talking to that was defending it, saying that, you know, this wasn't about, you know, just lollipops and rainbows, said to me that they don't think that I fully understood it. It's not rock, paper, scissors, and tug of war like social media would have you believe. There's a rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. You know, it's funny. I shouldn't say this on the air, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure the statute of limitations are up. When I was in high school, we used to gamble. You know, not a lot of money, you know, just like dollars and stuff. But we probably should have been doing that. When I was in high school, we would gamble. And we would gamble on, like, you know, poker and things like that. And it got to the point where the school was like, hey, you're going to be in serious trouble if you get caught gambling at school. Like, you're going to get in serious trouble. And I will never forget, on a basketball trip, they were, you know, on the bus doing rock, paper, scissors. And the entire team was, like, all gathered around. And one person, oh, why throw paper when you could have thrown rock? So there was some team building in that, but it wasn't really forced upon us. We were trying to get away with something we weren't supposed to be doing. Rock, paper, scissors. Oh, my God. It'll be shocking. You'll try to buy an orange in town, and you'll be like, wait a minute. I went to the grocery store, and there were no oranges. Oh, that's because all of the oranges sent to Nashville were sent to the Titans facility. They've cut them into orange slices, put them in little baggies, and the players will suck on them and eat them after practice. Tug of war, rock, paper, scissors. 615-737-1025. Corey Curtis joins us next. Somebody company 1025 the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon, with a buy one, get one free admission. Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon, where parking, tubes, and sunscreen are always free. Get this deal now at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. So the Titans have come up with a new, fun, innovative way to work on discipline and leadership and team building throughout the offseason, and apparently, unbeknownst to me until just now, it involves them playing rock, paper, scissors. That I was unaware of. Corey Curtis, News 2, joins us now on the program. So, Corey, we start there. You were at the press conference this week with Brian Callahan when Brian Callahan talked about the new 8-team format. You guys asked Tony Pollard about it and everybody else. What's your take on it?
You know what? Mike Mularkey did something really similar, where he made practice really competition-based, and there might have been different reasons. But I think when you're a losing football team, you've got a lot of stuff to work on, and it's, I think you got to, you know, Lou Holtz, I covered him at South Carolina, and he used to always say, cars in the ditch, who's going to get out and push? And I think this is all about getting everybody on the same page and getting everybody out of the car to push. And so I think anything that helps you, you know, build competition, build communication, build leadership, you know, and build a belief in your football team are all good things. Look, there's different ways to get there. And I think a team is an evolution. And I think, like, this team right now is an infant. And so I think it takes handling it a little bit different way.
Do you think that that works, though, with grown 30-year-old players that are millionaires?
Well, I think you're focusing on rock, paper, scissors, and I think that that is a minute portion of this. I think it's more about getting guys to work together, to get to know each other, to root for each other, and to be accountable for their performance on a daily basis. And so I think that all works. You know, whether you play rock, paper, scissors or not, it makes no difference to me. But I think how it formulates into practice every day, I think does matter. I think that does matter.
Here's my problem, though. Not so much with that. You're right. I am making fun of rock, paper, scissors more so than anything else. But I don't think that that's what the Titans need. I don't think the Titans lost all those games last year because they weren't a cohesive team or they didn't get to know each other or they didn't care about one another. I think they lost those games because Brian Callahan was so optimistic. Brian Callahan, Rand Carthon, and Bill Callahan were so optimistic that Nicholas Petit-Ferrer could play right tackle when I knew that he couldn't play right tackle and would ask Callahan about that. Like, what if these guys show you in camp that they can't do it? And I'm watching these Seahawk practices and I'm like, this isn't good enough. And no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I mean, again, I busted your chops over the whole report on the sideline last year where you said that the right side of the line was something they felt good about, but that was something that they said. And I knew, like, that's crazy talk. I watched Skoronski in practice and I'm like, why? I mean, then Callahan get up there. Oh, he's having a great camp. I'm like, I don't think he is. And I think it's too much of that. You know, too much of Will Levis throws one interception in the 2-minute drill against Seattle. And instead of blowing the whistle and saying, get your ass back out there and do it right, he says, good job, guys. Hit the showers. And I don't know if he's changing that. I think he's too nice. And I think that's a problem, Corey. And I don't think this solves that.
I think this does change that because it now – that he is now accountable for that interception on the scoreboard. And there's accountability with everyone on his team, you know, with that interception every day in practice. And everyone will know about it and will be able to continue to see about it because this is a competition that will go on and on. And yeah, there were definitely mistakes that were made on how the team was handled. And, you know, I think they're trying to rectify some of that. But I do think a lot of this, in my understanding, is, you know, is to address the little things that get you beat. You know, things like ball handling, you know, ball security, things like pre-snap penalties, things like alignment and communication. Those are all a part of this competition in trying to make those things an everyday thing so that it just becomes a part of life and what you do. You know, because, you know, they had some numbers last year that were really bad, you know, as far as mistakes that were made. They were, you know, near the bottom of the league, you know, in penalties, near the bottom of the league in, you know, second and long situations. And so, you know, it's about eliminating a lot of the negatives that get you beat. And, you know, if you get beat on talent, it's one thing. When you get beat on mistakes, it's another. And I think a lot of it right now is about having that accountability, you know, to each other every day right now to eliminate the mistakes that get you beat.
Do you think this is a real quarterback competition, Corey? Do you think that they're being serious when they talk about splitting reps and not just giving the job to Cam Ward?
Well, I mean, look, they said they're splitting reps right now, but they said that would change once they start going offense versus defense in that situation. So I think the split is going to start to change, you know, once we get into mini camp and some of those and into phase three here, you know, a little bit. And look, if they view Cam as not ready to go to start the season, you know, that he needs a little bit more time, that still doesn't mean to me that it's an open competition that Will Levis, you know, can win the job. I mean, they need Cam Ward to win this job. But I mean, what week did Jaden Daniels start last year? Was it
week
or four?
One.
No, I think Mariota started to start the season.
No. Jaden Daniels started right away, but Drake May sat the bench and I believe started week four, week five.
Okay. Yeah. So again, like I said, this team's an infant right now, and this is about the next 10 years, not about, you know, the first month of the season. So if they view him as not ready the first couple of weeks, you know, because they want to give him a little bit more time, I don't view that as a huge red flag. Oh, Will Levis won the competition. It just means they might want him to have more time. Because, look, if Will Levis beats out Cam Ward, you got huge problems. And that's not me slighting Will. It's that you just spent your first pick of the draft on this guy. You know, you've bet the farm on this guy. You turned down a huge trade, you know, that this guy was going to be the guy to lead you. Now, teams have overcome that in the past. The 49ers had a colossal trade for Trey Lance that didn't work out, and they still managed to get to the Super Bowl. But they're kind of an outlier, I think, there. So, you know, they need him to win. I think the expectation is that he will win. It's just, you know, I think it's just not anointing before anybody's ever done anything. I think he wants to go out and show his teammates that he's the guy. My guess is they're not worried about him proving that he's the guy. They're very confident that he will do it in short order.
Well, if we're keeping score here and the score is to hold guys accountable, what if Levis or Brandon Allen have a higher score than Cam Ward?
Well, you know, then they've got a better chance of staying on the football team. You know, I think that their score is one thing. You know, ceiling and growth and what they create, you know, are another. But those scores matter as to how you're performing. But again, you know, if we go by what the score would have been last year, you know, probably would have been in the negative for the Titans quarterbacks. So, you know, if we can just get that number back to even this year, that would be a nice step forward.
Well, Will Levis was terrible last year in OTAs. He was terrible in 7-on-7s. He was terrible in training camp. He was terrible in the Seahawk practices. I mean, I got to say, if we're going to sit here and say that, hey, this thing matters now, we're taking it more seriously, this matters, this is more important, but then it's like, well, but not for Cam, then it's bullcrap. You know what I mean?
Well, but again, if he's not ready, then don't start him. That's my thing. You know, you don't have to. And maybe that's why they're taking their time with it. But, you know, I agree with you. If Cam comes out and he struggles in camp and you think he needs more time, give it to him. Because it's about the next 10 years. It's not about this year.
I agree with that. Corey Curtis, Fireball Hot Take Friday is tomorrow, but I want your hot take today. What do you have?
You know, everybody, the NFL is going to allow players to play flag football. And all I keep hearing is everybody's like, well, what if this guy gets hurt? What if that guy gets hurt? What if this guy gets hurt? And believe me, I get that. But nobody says that about Ronaldo and Messi with the Olympics or the World Cup. All right? Nobody says that about Michael Jordan or LeBron when it came to playing in basketball in the Olympics. All right? Why is it different for NFL players to go play flag football? It's a non-contact game. All right? This is what they do every day in practice. Let them go play. Some guy may get hurt. It may happen. It may indeed happen. But you know what? It also happens in training camp. So we could just eliminate training camp for that aspect as well. Let them go play. Stop freaking out. Other sports do it, and everybody's okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure I care about that, about the injury thing with playing flag football, as much as I'm more worried about how I don't care about it. I mean, like, I just, you know, you want to go play flag football, do it on your own time, but I guess that's what they're doing. Corey Curtis,
well,
News 2.
The NFL cares about it because it's about money, and it's about marketing their players to other countries.
Yeah, I don't think that, like, I think they think this is going to be like the dream team in Barcelona, and I don't think that, but that's just me. Corey Curtis, News 2, as always, on the program. Corey, great stuff. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, man.
Yep. Coming up next, something that many of you wanted that Amy Adams Strunk was not going to do, and it feels like you're going to get to see it. I'll explain. We'll get to it next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106 for the game.
Houston was offering picks 58 and 79 to go along with a third-round pick in 2026 for 38, where the Patriots took Trayvon Henderson. And you could hear it right there where Elliot Wolf has the phone and he puts the phone kind of down and says, or, you know, puts it down or gets off the call and says to the guys, you guys want to do this? Asking Vrabel and Cowden. And between Vrabel and Cowden, they sort of look over Elliot Wolf and are like, yeah, we should do this, meaning making the pick. And they just put in the card on Trayvon Henderson. And that's when Elliot Wolf turns around and says, get Trayvon Henderson on the phone. And that's what they were doing pretty much the whole time. Elliot Wolf was in the middle on the phone, and Cowden and Vrabel were on either side of him, talking over him, basically, trying to figure out what to do. And then they would tell Elliot Wolf what to do, and Elliot Wolf would then say, okay, you have a deal. Or he turned around to one of the lead scouts there, Cam Williams, and says, okay, get Trayvon Henderson on the phone. If you're just watching it casually,
he's the secretary.
You would think, no, but you would think it's, hey, the power structure, Vrabel, Wolf, Cowden, and there are the three of them are up front making the call, and it's those three collaboratively. It is not. It was Vrabel and Cowden, and Wolf was the admin. Wolf was the secretary. He was
the courier.
Gertrude, get Fred Wilson on the phone.
There you go. That was Boston Radio. Apparently, there is a forged in Foxborough YouTube behind the scenes Hard Knock style series, which I will tell you that I have watched. And that is called Forged in Foxborough. And it's kind of, you know, behind the scenes with Mike Vrabel, the great Mike Vrabel, as head coach of the New England Patriots. And that right there, they were talking about the draft room and the structure and the takeaway that they had. That's 98.5 The Sports up in Boston. The takeaway they had in that cut right there was Elliot Wolf, who is supposedly the vice president of player personnel, kind of the de facto GM. He's not doing anything. It is Vrabel's show. That is the sentiment. That is kind of the sense that they had, that it is Vrabel and Cowden, and they are telling Elliot Wolf, get Johnny Joe on the phone. And so let's just say that that is what is happening in New England. Then what that tells us is that the New England Patriots and Robert Kraft are willing to give Mike Vrabel and Ryan Cowden, but really Vrabel, what Vrabel wanted from Amy Adams Strunk when she fired John Robinson in 2022. I remember asking Vrabel after Robinson got fired, do you think you're qualified to run a personnel department? And of course, Vrabel gave me this spiel about doing what's best for the team or, you know, what's better every day and worried about the player. You know, Vrabelese. But he didn't say no. And then Joe and Diana Russini reported after Vrabel got fired that Vrabel told Amy when she had fired Robinson and was looking for a general manager, just make me the GM. Give me the Belichick powers. Give me the Andy Reid powers. Give me the Pete Carroll powers. Give me the Sean Payton powers. Give me the Kyle Shanahan powers. I've earned it. Give it to me. And apparently that pissed Amy off. Well, apparently he's getting that in New England with Cowden right there as his right-hand man. And I will say this. I have watched some of that YouTube series, The Forged in Foxborough. First of all, it's too long. It's like an hour long. And in it, you know, they're in personnel meetings, and there's Vrabel's right-hand man, Stretch, just sitting down writing stuff in the meetings. And, you know, again, these are personnel meetings, not coaching meetings. I think they're probably right. I think this is the Vrabel show. Elliot Wolf is going along to get along, but Vrabel is going to operate in a silo the same way he did with Rand Carthon, where it's him and Cowden over here and it's Wolf over there. And it sounds like, again, Vrabel's the one calling the shots. And I'm sure there are going to be some of you out there that are going to say, Jared, why are you making a big deal about this? Because Vrabel is gone and it's on to, you know, focus on the Titans and not who used to be the coach of the Titans and not. Well, I'm going to tell you why I'm focused on this. Because this is what Vrabel wanted. This is what he wanted all along, supposedly, if we are to believe that it is him and Cowden and that Elliot Wolf is being treated like the secretary and getting, you know, players on the phone to call him or whatever, but that it's Elliot Wolf. Again, the way they broke it down was that the Texans had called trying to trade up to 37 and that Elliot Wolf was on the phone with Houston and looked over at Vrabel and Cowden and said, what do you think? And Vrabel and Cowden talked to each other and then said no. As in, it's Vrabel running the show, conferring with Cowden, which if Cowden had been named the general manager, that's exactly what would have happened around here. Well, won't it be nice to kind of see whether or not Vrabel's right? Again, I would never give Mike Vrabel that kind of power. I do not think Mike Vrabel has enough experience in personnel to be able to pick players and pick them appropriately. I just don't believe it. That's me. But I'm also open to the idea that I might be wrong. Amy Adams Strunk, whether it was right, whether it was wrong, apparently she felt the same way. No, Vrabel, you are not entitled to be in charge of the players. A lot of you think that was a terrible mistake on her part. Well, we're going to see. And so I actually think that this is great. I am incredibly interested in this. And I can't see how a lot of you wouldn't care. If Mike Vrabel's in charge of the Patriots, I mean truly in charge, where if Vrabel wants Will Campbell and Elliott Wolf wants Johnny Joe, they're going to draft Will Campbell. And everybody knows it. If it really is Elliott Wolf, hey, Gertrude, go get Johnny on the phone. If that's the case, and it is Vrabel and Cowden, you are going to see in New England what you would have seen here. And even with Drake May already there as the quarterback, well, you know, again, you've got Cam Ward. So we're going to see if them doing it their way, we're going to see if it actually works. I don't think it's going to. I think Vrabel is going to build an okay team. I think Vrabel as a head coach, with him calling the shots, is a 7-8 win coach. If Vrabel has a good general manager, he is an elite coach. But again, every time I think about all the things people say about Vrabel, there's one thing that keeps coming back into my mind, and that's, you know, Todd Downing. Every time I think of that. But again, it sounds like, and I would say, if we took a vote at the time that Robinson got fired, and we took a fan vote, a referendum, and we said, okay, here are your options. We can either have Amy and her crew go find a general manager and put them with Vrabel and say, okay, here you go, which is what they ended up doing. You two, hold hands. Work together. That's what's going to happen. You can do that. You can fire Vrabel so you can start completely fresh. Go get a general manager who then hires the coach, everything else. Or Vrabel's in charge and Cowden is going to run the personnel department at the behest of Vrabel. I could be wrong about this. I think the majority would have voted that. That they would have voted put Vrabel in charge. And Amy wouldn't do it. I'm not against it because I wouldn't do it either. But with a lot of things in life, we always have these moments where we say, well, you know, if this had happened, then I think that would have happened. And there's no real way to know. But it seems like we're going to get to know now. Like, did the Titans make the worst mistake of all time in letting the great Mike Vrabel go off and run the operation? Because, again, this is what it sounds like, is that it's his operation with Ryan Cowden right there as his right-hand man. And I've told people, I'm like, again, the report was that Vrabel went to Amy and asked to be the general manager. Amy was turned off by that and actually had considered firing Vrabel too to start fresh. I don't really believe that, by the way, but that's the report, is that Amy had thought about firing Vrabel and, you know, just clean start anyway. And if that's the, and I said, look, looking back on it, and I didn't like this at the time, but I didn't think it was going to necessarily be as bad as it was. I said, if you're going to really go and get a general manager to work with Mike Vrabel, where Vrabel was, you know, toothpaste out of the tube at this point, you should just go ahead and get Vrabel somebody he wants. And clearly that person is Cowden. So if you wanted to keep Vrabel so badly, you didn't want a fresh start, you didn't want, then you should have just hired Ryan Cowden and let Vrabel do it. But I think they're going to fail. I think they're going to fail. I could be wrong. A lot of people, even the people up there, they think, oh no, Vrabel, he's got it. He's a dude. He's a, but at least we get to see the end result. Somebody's going to be right. Amy's going to be right, or Vrabel's going to be right. Somebody's going to, I'm going to be right, or I'm going to be wrong about it. We'll see. And I am excited for that. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your phones on that. Plus, I do have one other thought on the Vrabel thing. I have a theory. that I want to get to, and we'll do it next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
This is a passing camp. This is a non-contact camp and time of year. But I think the receivers and the DBs can certainly look to mirror and shadow and react and still go make plays on the football and try to stay up. It's hard to, maybe the running backs you can evaluate, are they picking up the right person in protection? Not necessarily sure if they're going to be able to block them, but are they getting the right guy? Quarterbacks, operation, the urgency in which we practice are things that are important. Our tempo, the way that we finish plays, our effort, and continue to build the identity. Are we taking care of the football when we're running with it in the open field, things like that.
That was Vrabel. I think you've heard all those things before. I've heard them too. One thing is incredibly obvious when it comes to Vrabel. He's not changing. He thinks everybody here was stupid, and he's going to do things the exact same way. And now it sounds like he is in charge in New England, which, again, I welcome. I want to see, was I right? Was Amy right? Vrabel can't run the operation, or are we wrong and that he's going to have a run in New England like Belichick did, and we're going to feel like the fans of the Cleveland Browns watching him win Super Bowl after Super Bowl? So somebody texted into the text line and said, who cares about what Mike Vrabel? Can we talk about the Steelers dynasty from the 70s? And somebody else said, I don't care about the people that aren't here anymore. Well, shouldn't you? Like, shouldn't you care? To say, hey, our organization decided that Mike Vrabel was not good enough to be able to run the operation the way Sean Payton can run the operation for the Denver Broncos. Were we right or were we wrong? Let's see. Do you not care about that? I care about that. And I have a theory when it comes to Vrabel. And my theory is people get caught up in the character. Like, if you were to cast a football coach in a movie, it'd be Vrabel. The bravado, the personality. I see all these things. I've been listening to Belichick's book. I know. But I've been listening to Belichick's book. And the most important thing that Belichick says that he preached when he was the coach was put the team first. How many times have we heard Mike Vrabel talk about putting the team first or the way you treat the team? That was like one of his core, if not the core principle. And I keep saying, he's like Belichick. Too loyal to his assistant coaches, thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, works really hard for sure. And everyone's like, well, he's got a personality and Belichick doesn't. Okay, that's it. That he played. But eventually that wears off. And the one thing I cannot get over when it comes to Vrabel, and everybody in the national media and everybody tells me, oh man, Vrabel, this guy, he's such a good coach. You will see. Todd Downing. I just can't get over that. If Mike Vrabel is such a good coach, you explain why Todd Downing stayed on the coaching staff as the OC after that first year when they lost to the Bengals in the playoffs. They threw three interceptions and he brought Downing back as OC. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025. Eli says John Robinson was a better GM than Mike Vrabel was a coach. Personally, I believe that, but I know that people, Vrabel, good. Robinson, bad. But I do, in theory, believe that. One texter says, Vrabel is not smart. He told you that himself. Yeah, I think he was trying to be self-deprecating. Vrabel definitely thinks highly of himself. He is going to flop horribly in New England unless he calls his buddy Tom Brady to slap some sense in him. Even that would still leave him in the same problem that he has right now, which is that he's not very smart, and that doesn't work in the NFL. Not being not smart works in the NFL. You don't have to be a freaking Rhodes Scholar to be successful in the NFL. I mean, look at Belichick. Again, Belichick's won 6 Super Bowls. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. And, I mean, look at him. Like, I mean, come on now. Look at him right now. But I do think Vrabel needs to stay in his lane. Dan Quinn, I think, is a solid coach with some dopey tendencies that can bite him in the tush at the wrong time. But Dan Quinn in Washington, he's never going to try to overstep his boundaries. Vrabel, it's like my way or the highway, and it's going to be that way. And I don't think that works. That's how Parcells was. That's how Belichick was. That's how Vrabel is. One texter says the Titans are going to look dumb as hell if he goes there and succeeds. We just gave him his audition for the rest of the NFL and gave him away. That is the Titans' way. Piss it away. Piss it away with Vrabel, piss it away with A.J. Brown, and piss it away with Derrick Henry. I can understand how you feel that way. I'm just going to tell you, if Mike Vrabel is such a good coach, explain the coaching staff at the end here. And I believe, you know, John Robinson's probably never going to get another job in the NFL, and I hate that for him, but that's kind of the reality of the league. If he were to get another job, I believe that he would do a better job because he would learn from the mistakes of the first go-round. He wouldn't draft another Caleb Farley, or he wouldn't trade away A.J. Brown if he was in a similar spot. I could be wrong. I'm just assuming. Vrabel's actions in New England tell us he's not changing. He doesn't think there was anything that he did wrong, and it was more so about he got done wrong. And I just don't believe that. But you know what? There's a scoreboard. We will see. 615-737-105. TD is with us for the TD Power Hour. We'll get into the Titans offseason. We'll do it next. Stoneman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.